All right, welcome to the second session of our conference. This is Jeff Ford's Accountability, Learning to Breathe Life into Individual Recovery and Struggling Relationships. Jeff Ford received a psychology degree from the University of Utah and his master's degree of marriage and family therapy from Purdue. He is a licensed marriage and family therapist. He is a member of the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapy. He has contributed to the field by publishing articles about the practice of marriage and family therapy and regularly speaks throughout the community on the topics of pornography, marriage, and addiction. In addition to his clinical practice, he has been an instructor of psychology and adolescent development on a university level. Jeff specializes in working with individuals and families struggling with sexual addiction. I just want to remind you that you need to, if you will, fill out the survey in the back of the program and make sure you turn it in at the end of the conference, as well as remember those five things you need to share with people from Pamela Atkinson. Jeff Ford.
Okay, so on behalf of the board of Utah Coalition Against Pornography, I just want to personally say thank you to each of you for being here. We love getting out into the community and providing this education that all of us need in this day and age. Also, I want to say a special thank you to Steve and Real Croshaw. They are good friends of mine, and last night I asked them to kind of participate in this presentation with me. And thankfully, they get to speak a lot, and so they're very comfortable speaking, and they consented, and they're going to participate with me and kind of give a personal seal of experience to some of the things that I'm going to share with you today. So again, Stephen Real, I just want to express gratitude to each of you and let you know I love you each, and I'm so thankful that you're going to participate with me today. So it means a lot to me. I'm very happy to share with you some very important things for a family member. Maybe it's you, maybe it's your spouse who is struggling with pornography addiction. And I'm going to talk about how to handle betrayal of that and how long that lasts in a couple or in a family. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about why it's a betrayal. So each one of us are biologically, psychologically wired to seek comfort from real people, especially our family members or our spouse. And when an individual is seeking out pornography, which is just like any other addiction, they're doing it to get comfort, they're reaching to fake people at the expense of reaching to real people. So when, for instance, when a husband is going through pain and he turns to someone fake, it's really a betrayal where that pain and those emotions should be going to his wife, and he should be turning to her for that support. And so when he doesn't, it's a betrayal. Obviously, it's a betrayal because if they're sexually acting out, it's a form of betrayal as well. And so it's very difficult, especially for wives, because whenever something difficult comes up in their marriage, the person that they would normally turn to would first be their husband. But if the husband is also the one that did the betrayal, it's very difficult for them to go to that person. And so what happens all at the same time is the person that would help them the most becomes the person that hurt them the most. And so what happens with these women is they close down. They totally isolate, they withdraw, and they experience trauma. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along, but I want to talk for just a minute about what trauma is. First of all, I just want to share a little story. When I was on my mission in Atlantic Canada, We decided that we were going to go and visit this family that didn't get much contact on the other side of Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia is just a province in Canada on the eastern seaboard. And the road to this family's house was quite treacherous, especially in the winter. And I think it was in January, if I remember correctly. And this was 20 years ago. I was driving, and during the drive, it had just started to snow. And there was a light, there were big snowflakes, and it was a light covering of snow on the road. Just a skiff of snow. And I wasn't going over the speed limit. I thought I had adjusted my speed to the weather conditions. And sometimes those type of weather conditions, it doesn't matter how fast you're driving. And I started to take a right turn around the edge of a mountain. And typically when you're turning right and then the car starts to slide, you would go left. Thank goodness that we didn't, because if we would have went left, we would have went down off this cliff into a ravine with a river at the bottom and most likely been seriously injured or even killed. But I feel like we had guardian angels. We, instead of turning left, we actually went to the right. We hit a boulder and we flipped end over end and landed on the roof of the car. We were able to walk away, but I experienced trauma. That instant when the car started sliding, when we were turning right, was recorded in my body. Judy Crane, who's a trauma specialist in our country, talks about how trauma is recorded on a molecular level. And even 20 years later, every once in a while, if the car is turning right just the same way, my body will, my heart rate will increase, my eyes will dilate, my hands and my palms will become very sweaty, and I don't make a very good backseat driver. My wife would definitely tell you, and she would raise her hand in agreement, but it's a little bit even more loaded because my body's having this trauma response. It's a very real thing, and if anybody out there has kind of had a similar experience, you know what I mean. But trauma is something that can reoccur years later. It's been 20 years. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does happen, it totally is felt throughout my body. And families and couples who have experienced pornography addiction in their marriage or their family, they also experience that trauma. And there's research has shown that the closer the relationship that person is to you, the higher the trauma. So wives experience even more trauma. So let's slow it down and look at how it happens for many of the women who are married to someone who is addicted to pornography. So in the past, or it could be even in the present, they are using something to look at pornography. And in this case, you can see this individual is holding an iPad. And that iPad becomes the point of betrayal or the point of trauma, where the wife will, whenever she's exposed to that iPad with her husband holding it like in the corner, it's going to bring up a lot of trauma. And trauma expert Peter Levine talks about how trauma is the experience that a person has in the absence of an unempathic witness. And what that means is typically, especially women, whenever they experience difficulty or pain, they have a greater inclination to reach out and talk to people. But when their husband is the one, there's a sense of embarrassment. They don't feel like they can. They don't feel like they can reach out, and so they isolate. And so that intensifies the trauma. And it's important to understand that reflex, because that becomes her recovery of, like, instead of reaching in, she has to reach out. And when couples begin recovery, like, this can be a very, very quick process. So another quick note about this is women will naturally have the inclination to turn to their spouse, but if they're the one that triggered them, they're not going to be able to turn to him. And so they don't have anybody to soothe or comfort them. They just kind of hold it within them. And remember, it's recorded on a molecular level. But what happens in the recovery process is oftentimes it's really kind of confusing for especially family members, because maybe, you know, the husband has a month or 6 months or a year of recovery under his belt. And they see that, why is wife still freaking out? Why is she still going crazy? And so a lot of people kind of like erroneously think that, well, there's just something wrong with that woman because she's still having problems. And it's really hard for the guys too, because they've steadily improved. They've learned how to refrain from looking at pornography or sexually acting out, and they've gained progress, and they've felt healing and comfort. They feel better when they come out into the light. And it's really confusing for these guys when they're, you know, sitting down with the iPad, and they may be doing something totally innocent. They may be reading the scriptures or something. But if their wife sees them kind of tucked up in the corner of the room with an iPad, what that's going to do is trigger all of that trauma that they experienced. And it can be 1 month down the road, a year down the road, and Steve and Reel are going to talk about it even being 10 years down the road after having that long of recovery, where wife totally remembers what's going on, what it feels like. And it's very difficult, because the guy who's reading the scriptures will go to like a church leader and say, something is wrong with my wife. I'm reading the scriptures and she kind of like lets loose on me. What is wrong with her? And that makes the trauma worse. It grows the trauma. It makes it more intense for them. And it's so important to understand that what's actually happening for the woman is she's actually responding to this. Husband is having kind of like this, what is going on here type of response, like, why aren't you excited that I have a year of recovery? But she's not responding to that. She's responding as if it's this. Her heart rate is increased. Her whole body is activated. And husband is totally at risk for going into his shame because he's being treated like a monster. But it's so important for family members and leaders and therapists to help them understand that they're not responding to the good things that you're doing. They're responding to the trauma of the past. And trauma is very deceptive. The past becomes the present. And I like to show guys that, you know, even though they're doing all these things, they're possibly in therapy or group, they're visiting with their church leader regularly, they've got a long period of sobriety under their belt, but they sometimes still get treated like this. And sometimes they become angry. And it's so important for these men to have people that they can go to, because sometimes their wife isn't available because they're in their trauma, that they can kind of reassure, hey, this is, you're doing really good, you got to hang in there. And we're going to talk about how to handle this here in a minute, but it's very difficult for couples to kind of navigate these waters, because it is a distorted reality. Nobody's responding to the truth, because the truth is there is a lot of recovery and progress going on, but the truth also is that trauma has a long-lasting effect, and we have to learn how to handle the trauma response. Because what happens with that woman's body is, again, the present and the past become one. And thankfully, I have Steve and Reel here, and they're going to come up here, and they're going to share a little bit about what this has been like for them. They're going to share an experience of this happening to them, maybe one or two experiences that they're going to share with you. And if you have questions, that's okay to ask too. So Steve and Reel, do you mind coming up and sharing this for a moment?
Before we share a story about this specific topic, you need to be just a little bit aware of who we are and our story. What we're talking about here, my wife has experienced personally the trauma associated with betrayal, my betrayal. My forms of acting out have included pornography, masturbation, adult establishments, and acting out with prostitutes over a period of many years and decades, and multiple attempts at stopping behavior and finding recovery. I first saw pornography when I was 6 years old, and I had behaviors associated with pornography up through the time that we were married, but I didn't tell her anything about that. She came into the marriage without any understanding of sexual addiction, my behaviors associated with that, and I didn't know anything about that either. I thought marriage would solve that problem for me. It didn't. So after multiple attempts at recovery, Real went through dramatic trauma in her life. And it wasn't until about 7 or 8 years ago that we began to understand something about trauma. Prior to that, we didn't know anything about it. And so she's been through a lot without a lot of help. I stopped acting out 10 years ago. My sobriety date is August 25, 05. That was the day I got arrested for picking up a prostitute. And so with that background, I hope that you can understand something of what we're talking about now in relationship to trauma.
The trigger, one of the triggers, I have many, of my trauma was my husband's car. It wasn't the iPad. My husband's car, and the first time, 10 years ago, because he told me what he had been doing, and I said, I will not sit in the seat where prostitutes have sat. That was the first time that I actually said, there's a boundary here, and I will not, and you can either go by yourself or sell the car and get a different one, which he did. In all those 32 years up to that, I didn't know that I could say no. I could say, fix this, take care of it, you know, and try and be helpful, but I didn't know that I could say, not for me. And that was one of the first things that I, as I look back, and I just realized it as we were looking at it, it wasn't the iPad for me, although there were other behaviors, but I can be triggered even if he doesn't say anything. I can, in fact, that's a big trigger for me. It's a trauma trigger for me if I think he's not being honest. And so I will make things up in my head. And that made up stuff will haunt me if I allow it to. And so we had an experience, I think this is where we tell the Walgreens story. you can go ahead and...
No, this is the Walgreens story.
We have a lot of them. 42 years of...
I tell you the Walmart story, the Walgreens story, the... They're all identified by where we were. This was about 4 years ago. And we were in a Walgreens store. And any store, any public place can be a triggering place. But we were in there shopping and doing whatever we were doing. And there was a person in there that Real saw, a woman dressed in a very provocative way. I didn't see her. I couldn't describe her to you. But enough that Real was triggered and felt very triggered as a result, thinking that I saw her.
Because I thought, this is something, and he's not saying anything to me. And the level of honesty needs to be so high, it has to be impeccable. Honesty for me has to be impeccable, because it is about the behavior, but it's more about the lies. I can't trust anything And so the behavior is one thing, and the lies are the huge monster.
So nothing was said. I didn't see the person.
I didn't know he didn't see you.
In different places of the store. We get out to the car, and Real has essentially turned away and is looking out the window to the right. And after a moment, I know that something is seriously wrong. And she's in pain. And I know that she's in pain. And it's easy for me now to see that and be able to recognize that. And hopefully, I'm in a good enough place at that moment that I can wisely now apply the tools that I've learned over a period of many years. And so I ask her, can you tell me why you're feeling pain? What's happening? What's happened?
Just that question.
And so
without a defensive, like, what's your problem?
Yeah, I mean.
No, it was like, what's happening for you? Oh.
And I can assure you that it's easy to go the other direction and be defensive, but that is not the way to go if I want to have a healthy relationship with my wife and hold her pain and help her. So fortunately, in this situation, we'll tell you a positive story. I was able to ask her kindly and humbly, can you tell me what's hurting? So she told me.
And I said, there was a woman, and I'm sure you were looking at her. And he said, I didn't see the woman that you're talking about. I don't know who you're talking about. And he didn't say it in a defensive way. I can tell defensiveness and humility and honesty now. And I went, oh, he... Then he said...
There's an important lesson in this.
This was the first time that I was able to say, that's my trigger. It was a kind of an aha for me. I didn't want to accept it, but I was working my own recovery. I was getting honest with myself about what are my triggers and what causes me to feel this way. And so when he said very kindly, was that your trigger? And I started to cry. It was my trigger. And then we had this wonderful...
There's a little... Real has a book, and in this little book, there's four things that she wants men to understand, and I'm going to tell you what those four are in this kind of a situation. And the first one is to acknowledge that I have been the cause of pain in her life. And so I can say to her, the fact that I have betrayed you over and over again, and you have experienced trauma, right now you're feeling pain as a result of my actions. So I can acknowledge her pain in an honest way. The next thing that I can do is recognize that that is not fair, that no woman should have to experience that because of the betrayal of their husband. The third thing that I can assure her that I am committed to my recovery, that I will do what it takes to make sure that I don't go back to that behavior that betrays her and our relationship and myself. And the last thing is find out if there's something that I can do for her right now. That's the fourth. What can I do for you right now to help you assure you that I recognize your pain and hold your pain? That is not easy to do for those who have learned to be defensive, to try to protect themselves in this very difficult situation of trauma and addiction, the lust that's associated with that. It is doable, but it takes a desire on my part to recognize the pain of someone else that I've caused.
We were in a group one evening, and there were two other couples, and one man said that little script, it's a little bit canned, but he said that to his wife over something that happened that week, and it fell totally flat. I mean, he said all the right words, and there was nothing. And then the next man had something that he wanted to share with his wife about recognizing her pain. And as he was going through that, I was bawling. It was so from the heart. He knew he was no longer in the center of his life. Every addict has him in the center. He had moved out, and he had put a connection with God and with that humble attitude back into that center. And then it wasn't about, I've got to be defensive and I've got all this shame. The shame will cause this defensiveness and like, you're picking on me. No, I'm not picking on you. I am sad.
That's one of the real challenges that we have to learn in this recovery effort, is that there are reoccurring situations that bring us to a point where we want to ask the other person, when are you going to get over this?
And both ways.
Both directions. She wants to know, when are you going to no longer have a lust trigger? Doesn't mean that I act on that lust trigger, but and then I might say to myself, I've been working at this for 10 years. I feel like we ought to be done with this situation when I'm feeling judged. That isn't the case. I have to be willing to recognize that she has experienced and continues to go back to that challenge associated with the trauma that I brought into her life.
Not by choice.
Not by choice.
I don't choose to go back there.
So there are other stories for another meeting. Thank you.
Okay, I just want to say a thank you for being open and vulnerable with that. And so can we just give them a quick round, you guys? So what they're sharing is so profound. And I want to kind of highlight something that Real said. She said, my trigger was my husband's car. I have worked with women whose their trigger was the time. 5:15, because they discovered that their husband was staying late looking at pornography, and the reason they were late wasn't because it was work, it was because they were looking at porn. So the time becomes the trigger. In my office, I always have a laptop computer, and I know when I'm visiting with a couple or a woman, and I can see them being hyper-focused on my laptop, I remove the laptop because they're totally triggered. And I remove it out of sight. And I've had to do that through the years of working with this situation. I've had women who their triggers are a certain part of town or a certain room in the house. And one of the things that's so important for couples to do is to identify where those triggers are or what time they are. Or Real also talked about a trigger for her was if she felt like her husband was not telling the truth. That was a trigger for her. It could be about, you know, did you have a chocolate sundae with fudge or caramel? And he says caramel when he was really fudge. That can be a trigger. Because if he's lying about that, he's lying about other stuff. The point is, it's important for couples and family members to identify what triggers that person's body to think in the present moment, it's the past. Because it's so hard for couples to feel as if, you know, even though the husband's got, like Steve was saying, 10 years of sobriety, but if they're in their trauma, they can't see any of it. And if they don't have the tools and the skills to reduce and diminish that trauma and the support to diminish that trauma, it's not going to happen. So let's talk about the tools. Steve talked about how it's really hard for him to kind of humbly, hey, look, this is what I did. And it's tough because I often like to tell couples it's like a fireball bouncing between the two of you. The trauma is kind of burning and singeing for the wife, but also for the husband, because he's kind of going into his shame, like he knows deep down that she's struggling because of him. But like Steve said, how long did he fool himself thinking that he was protecting her by keeping the secret? And it takes a long time for guys in recovery to learn that darkness never helps. It's only by stepping into the light that healing begins. And so in those moments, it's hard, it's intense, but the way to defeat the trauma, the way to diminish it and to get soothing and comfort from each other is to use the truth. And the truth is, when a husband can say to his wife, the fact that you're feeling this way right now is because of what I did to you. It's my fault. I did this to you. You're feeling this because of me. And had I never looked at pornography or betrayed you, you wouldn't be feeling this way right now. 1 year, 2 years, 10 years down the road. And totally being real. And it's so interesting. I witnessed this day in and day out. Real talked about how it's kind of a canned response. But when you speak the truth, even if I cue a couple to speak the truth, it doesn't change the truth. But if they're humbly submitting and just, this is what I did. I did this. The truth has a curious effect. It instantly begins to comfort and soothe. And we can't fight that. If we fight it, we build and strengthen the trauma. The answer is stepping into the light. The addicts know after years, decades, or even lifetimes, spending that time in the dark, it never helped them. And it certainly was a false sense of security if they kept it secret from their wife. Yes, she may not know. Yes, she may be living life as if nothing was wrong. But I work with countless women who, when they find out, they look back at that life and they feel like it's totally fake. They question, was it right for me to marry this person? Steve talked about how he entered that marriage not even knowing himself that he was an addict. But the level of betrayal that it caused when wife found out years later, it's a trauma to have to go back and question your life. Was it right that I married him? And would I have made a different choice if I would have known that he had this problem, if he would have kept it in the light? So again and again, because the trauma is so significant, couples have to use truth and accountability. First, men, you have to legitimize her feelings. And that's kind of what this first step that Steve talked about. The fact that you're feeling this is my fault. I did this. It was me who made this happen to you. And you never would have gone through this if it wasn't me. I did it. And if they're able to take that ownership, they're able to instantly, I see couple after couple, when a husband sincerely, like Real was talking about, and genuinely step forward and take ownership, I did this. They go from, you know, the person who hurt the most to the person who's protecting the most, because that wife will totally soothe and be comforted because she doesn't have to convince him anymore. She can know that he gets it. And there's a wonderful Shakespeare play. It's about two brothers, one of the brothers trying to kill the other. He repents of his ways. He gets involved with a person that remembers, hey, aren't you trying to kill your brother? And he says, 'twas I, but 'tis not I. When men can say, yes, that was me, but taking the second and third step that Steve talked about, this is what I'm doing now. I am visiting with my church leader. I'm going to SA Lifeline 12-step group. I'm visiting with a therapist. I've got this much recovery. I am waking up each morning and praying for help. This is what I'm doing now. That was me in the past. 'Twas I, but 'tis not I today, because this is what I'm doing today. And when couples can work together to put that in the past, that's when the healing can really begin. And it is amazing, as a couples therapist, you know, I just help people use the truth and use what's real in their marriage or their family. And it's kind of weird, because as a therapist, I've done this hundreds and hundreds of times. And I'm like, I wonder if it's going to stop working. But the truth always has the same effect. When our bodies feel or are exposed to truth, it's instantly calming and soothing. Even if it's difficult truths, it opens the pathway to peace and understanding and healing. And when couples can work together, they can start kind of, women can say, well, he is the person that hurt me the most, but he can also be the person that is helping me the most. And they can kind of forge those two people into one, because part of the trauma is because the women are going back and forth thinking, which husband's going to be coming home today? But when the husband can own the truth, it can help them, and it helps them to put the trauma in the past. And I want to take, if Steve and Real, if you guys can come back up and just kind of put a seal of personal experience approval of what happens in your marriage when you guys can work together to, you know, not allow the trauma to own you. Is that okay? All right.
I can say, for me personally, 'twas I, but 'tis not I today. And I have said to my husband, I can go to my victim place. Like, oh, dang, I had to do all this, you know, all that. And yet, as I look back, and I have said, because he's been through a lot more trauma than I have been through. He started when he was 6 years old. He was this little boy. And I have a picture of him when he's a little boy. And I think of what a sweet child. And the empathy that I have now for my husband and how hard he has worked. He's worked so hard to overcome the monster in his life and in mine and in our family's life. So I have said to him, you know, don't you wish that you didn't have to do this? And you know what his response is? Something I would have thought he would have said, yeah, wish it hadn't happened to me. But he doesn't say that. What do you say when I say, don't you wish you didn't have to go through all this?
I don't know. What do I say?
He says you don't wish to close the door on the past.
I don't wish to close the door on the past. Yeah, well, you know, what we have an opportunity, we all have opportunities in our life. And those opportunities, there are many of us that experience trauma in different ways. And really, I appreciate her understanding now of the trauma that those like myself that start early in their life in complete innocence, not knowing what's going on, and down this pathway of pornography addiction. There's a learning opportunity where what I'm grateful for is that there is a chance now to recognize God in my life. There's also an opportunity to recognize his power in the life of one that I love the most. I usually say that the challenges associated with trauma are greater than those associated with those like myself that deal with addiction, because you cannot control another person's betrayal of you. I have the ability to surrender and stop behavior. And that's one of the challenges. She has to trust that I'm willing to do that in order for her to continue down the pathway with me. I have to recognize how difficult that challenge is for her, because she has to learn to trust me again after I've broken that trust over and over and over again. But when that happens, when that trust begins to rebuild, there is a power in the bonding relationship of the two people that are involved with it. And I can gratefully say that we are happier now than we have ever been. Would I trade the experiences that we've gone through to find the relationship that we have now? Would there be a different path? This has been our path, and we continued on the path. It's a path that will probably not end until we're safely dead, and hopefully that will be the case, safely dead. You know, we want to reach the finish line. I have guys say, okay, when is this over for me? When am I done? You know, they come to a 12-step meeting. Do I work the 12 steps in 12 weeks? I'm good, I'm done, I go on with my
graduate,
life.
Graduate.
It just doesn't work
done.
That way. We're always working step 10. Maybe some of you know what step 10 is. It is, when I am wrong, I promptly admit it. And that is part of what we're talking about today in my relationship with my wife. If I am wrong, I promptly admit it. And she practices exactly the same 12 steps. When she's wrong, she will promptly
admit it. It was hard the first time I had to
say, especially when it's your fault.
I'm wrong.
So anyway,
I'm apologizing to a sex addict. And then that first time was such a relief. It's like, oh, I'm going to be honest with myself too. And the honesty between us from the relationship that we had for 32 years, and it was a peaceful relationship, really. We were not fighters. It went from bing. The opportunities for this relationship just went way up because we both get honest. And it gets a little messy for a few hours or a day or so but wow, we have the tools. I call my sponsor, I work through my own recovery, I work recovery, he works recovery, our family works recovery. It's an amazing process.
Thank you, Jen.
Again, thank you, Stephen Real. So the other thing that I want to add here is it's really tempting as lead church leaders, family members, spouses, to say, well, what's wrong with this woman? What's wrong with this couple? Why can't she just get better? But it's a process that takes a long time. And, you know, even after 10 years of sobriety and clean recovery, it's trauma can creep up out of nowhere. Just like when I'm in the car, every once in a while, I'm turning right and my whole body can be totally trauma. That trauma comes back. It's recorded at that molecular level. But the good news is this, that when you use the light, when a person can step into the light always heals. It doesn't matter what type of darkness, what type of trauma. If you're able to, together, confront it, bring it forward, and help each other to do that, that's where the healing is. And I invite each of you, in whatever way this affects you, it's a family member, maybe you're a church leader and you're helping couples, invite them into the light by just stating what's really happening to them. And helping them access that comfort that comes when they just, this is the truth. This is what I'm feeling. And again, I just want to, you know, very thankfully express my gratitude to Stephen Real for sharing their experience. I love them. I'm so thankful for you guys. I'm so thankful for you, each of you out here. And I hope that this has been useful for you and your whatever. Wherever you're at in this journey, whether you're helpers or people are helping you, I'm hopeful that this will be of some use to you. And again, thank you for being here.